Are you ready to level up and achieve peak performance? Let Healing Within help assist you to be at the top of your game. Pair massage and assisted practitioner stretching to be one step above your competitors. Go to healingwithinkc.com to book a session.
You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Second half of the program begins right now. We got a great event coming up on Thursday. Just found out, already sold out. As a matter of fact, we're going to be at the Linda Hall Library for a sports conference on the analytics era of Major League Baseball. Brian Kinney from MLB Network will be your moderator. We'll be doing the show live there that afternoon. That night, great guest, Daniel Mack, the VP and Assistant GM for Research and Development for the Royals. One of a number of guests that will be there. Another one of the guests is our next guest. He is Sean Foreman, PhD, President, Sports Reference, founder of Sports Reference. So all the time, I don't know how many hours of our lives have been spent on his great creation between the baseball reference, basketball reference, pro football reference, the college football reference, college basketball reference. Great sites. He's with us here, joins us right now on the program. Sean, how are you, sir?
I'm very good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we appreciate it. And did you think when you got going with Baseball Reference that it would be what it is today?
Absolutely not. It was more a diversion from my PhD thesis than anything else. And so it's it's been a long time though. It's been 23 years since we launched Baseball Reference. So just been day after day making it a little better each day and to get us to where we are today.
Yeah, and that is the beauty of it. I know you're making it a little bit better each day because when I make my little spreadsheets out of the different things that you guys do, and one of the things Curtis and I will go back and we did this 4 years ago. Let's update it. Let's get the last 4 years, guy. Like it was pertinent for whatever reason, something with the Chiefs or the Royals. And so I copy and paste it. Then I come back and I realize there's three new columns. And I got to reformat my Excel spreadsheet. That is the beauty of it. You guys are never done. Like, do you see the day where you're like, okay, we now have it all?
Well, certainly not. I mean, there's always more information. I mean, MLB is always racing ahead. Other leagues are always racing ahead to gather more information on the game. And so, we're just trying to keep a pace with what the industry is trying to gather. And it's, it's expanding. We also, fortunately, we have a very historical focus as well. So we're always going backwards and adding thanks to people like, volunteers at RetroSheet who are adding like 1905 box scores and, Negro League stats and things like that. So it's not just going forward trying to keep up with what's happening in the industry now. We also have a very historical bent and want to gather as much as we can about the history of the games as well.
Spending as much time on the sites as I do, I'll see the different things where like you guys are hiring, and I get a number of your different newsletters and everything that come in, and I'll see that you guys are hiring and there's different things that are going on. Which is all part of what you're talking about, always trying to grow and add another component to everything that you're doing. When did you realize that this was more than just something that was fun, but now has become really like a necessity of the industry, right? For media members like me or teams to be able to have it. Like I used to buy the Baseball Encyclopedia 2 years late because it was always cheaper. It was discounted then, and that was so the last 2 years I wouldn't have, right? But it was and I felt like I was pretty informed with it. When did you realize that you were becoming now part of the fabric of what it takes to cover sports, what it takes perhaps to just build a sports team? Like, everybody uses your information now. When did that dawn on you, and is it a little bit, overwhelming at times?
It's a little overwhelming at times. I would say it's kind of a process. I there were a few articles written about us early on in the 2000s in Sports Illustrated and elsewhere. And then, I think when we heard Ben Scully mention our site on air, that was a really big deal for us. We kind of realized that we had that definitely felt like we had made it. Hearing Scully mention Baseball Reference. Just this past month, we were mentioned in a Jeopardy clue on Jeopardy,
strong.
Which was not so. Which something we certainly never would have imagined would have happened. So, it's just been a process. It's very gratifying when professionals such as yourself are using the site because I think that's an indication that we're doing a good job and providing a useful service. So it's always fun to hear people mention the sites and people who use the sites as part of their workday. So I know it feels to me like we're doing a good job when those folks know that they can rely upon us.
I know you listen to your consumers. numbers because you have a little format where, like, if you find something, like Curtis and I were going through and we found, like, the number one overall draft picks, the first couple of guys in the AFL, like, their college wasn't listed. When you clicked on them, the college was there, but it was like, I don't know what had happened. And I sent it in, and I, you know, went through the format, and it's changed, and now it's updated. I love that because I feel like I'm kind of part of the community. You know, like I'm like my little bit. I'm like, and I appreciate any company that's like, we got our doors open to, hey, how can we get better? But how much do you get? You also don't get back to me in 20 minutes. So I know I'm not the only one.
Right.
How much do you get overwhelmed with, like, people trying, like, hey, you should do this, you should do that, you should do this? Like, is that kind of an unruly task in and of itself?
Well, yeah, it's gotten a little harder over time. I mean, when I first started, I was just doing Baseball Reference myself. And so I would, you know, answer all the emails, and, you know, if somebody had a suggestion and it didn't seem like it was too hard to do, I would, you know, I'd probably sit down and implement it. We've obviously grown substantially from that point, you know, having the 7 sites that we do and, you know, probably about a little over 1 million users a day on the site. And so we actually have 2 dedicated customer success people, one who focuses on our subscription product, StatHead, and then the other one who focuses on all the reference sites. And so I think, you know, Aiden, who works on our reference site, I think he, you know, probably answers 40 to 60 emails a day from people coming in. And we have we now have implemented a process where it gets entered into our bucks, that we have a bug tracking system that we use, and it gets entered into there and then routed to the right developer. And, you know, they'll, you know, depending on the, you know, priority of it and how severe of an issue it is, will, you know, either prioritize fixing it, you know, soon, or it gets, you know, gets logged, and, you know, at some point we hopefully we'll get to it. So we get better when people email us and tell us that stuff, you know, because if we can't, we have millions of pages of data on our sites, and so it's impossible to prove every single fact and check every single thing across all the teams and all the players when we change something. So just having all those eyes on it and people like yourself, you know, letting us know when they find something is probably the number one way that we improve the sites. And so it's, you know, it's a very, I like to say we don't have to give back any of the improvements we've made. It's all just ratcheting up, you know, hopefully better and better. And so that's a big part of our process. And I wouldn't say we answer, I don't know that we've answered every email we've ever received, but I bet it's over 98% that we've answered. So,
awesome.
we definitely view our users as important to the process and definitely want to make sure that we're careful stewards of their attention.
You mentioned that millions of people have viewed your various reference sites. I'm one of the few that goes all the way back to RetroSheet. I remember going to RetroSheet getting baseball scores. Were you someone who also used RetroSheet and saw it and thought, I can do something better with this information that they have?
I'll actually say we predated RetroSheet. So we actually had a site before RetroSheet did.
Take that! Shut my mouth.
I remember seeing it when it first existed. So I actually, my thought was, oh no, this is going to put me out of business when I saw RetroSheet. But no, it was, you know, the people at RetroSheet are awesome. I know them. I know the guy who started their site, Tom Ruane, really well, and I consider him a friend. And I always travel to the Sabre Convention every year, and they're often there as well. And so we're huge cheerleaders for huge fans of RetroSheet. And, you know, sort of like how you send us corrections, we send them corrections when we find them as well, or pass them along from users finding them and things like that. We'll get emails from people saying, "Oh, I was following your play-by-play while watching the 1967 World Series, and I noticed that in this play that it was actually, you know, the first baseman fielded it and then touched the base unassisted, and you have it as 3-1."
Wow.
And so, you know, we take that information, we, you know, pass it along to RetroSheet. They you know, probably look at the same YouTube video and confirm it, you know, update it, and then like 3-4 months later, it's updated on our site. So it's all, you know, we're all trying to get at the truth and find the correct information. So it's we're kind of, you know, I RetroSheet people are kindred spirits to us. We definitely are interested in getting this stuff right and making the data available.
Sean Foreman's going to be at the great talk we're going to have next Thursday over at the Linda Hall Library. Very much looking forward to it. He's the founder of the sports reference sites, Baseball Reference, Pro Football Reference. By the way, I've already had a couple of people say, thanks for having you on. I look at the site every day. Another guy says he uses it. He works over at Kaufman. He's like, I use it every single day. So you got a lot of fans here in Kansas City that are excited about the talk that you're going to give. How big? You mentioned all the data. Like when Curtis and I use like the Stathead, it's called now, and we run something. Like how big are the servers? Like how much computer power do you have to make the, you know, this the talk show fatty sitting in Kansas City wants you to run through every box score baseball's ever had? Like how the hell much computing power does that take?
It's significant. We spend quite a lot of money. You know, that's like probably 10% of our budget each year is just, you know, the computers. So, you know, now being in the cloud and all that, it's to some degree all virtual. And but, you know, for example, on our, you know, when you're looking at the querying the Stathead to find information on baseball, you know, we have, I think on the order of like 12 million plays listed in our play database. So you can search for, you know, search through all of those to look for, you know, all the walk-off home runs that the Yankees have hit against the Red Sox and things like that. And so, you know, that's, we're searching through 12 million rows, like a 200 columns, so it's over a billion cells in that table that you have access to. So it's not something you could do on your home computer, at least not in under an hour. We shoot for under a minute for all of those searches, so it's we do put a lot of significant computing power behind it. And one of the fun projects, so with my math background, one of the fun puzzles for me is trying to figure out like how fast we can make these queries run and make sure that you're not sitting there for minutes and minutes for to look up things like that. So there are significant technical challenges that we face to try and present this information.
Like the human aspect of it kind of fascinates me because somebody had to enter in that data. That's what blows my mind.
Right.
Every little stat there, somebody had to type 38 home runs or 127 RBIs. How is that done?
Yeah, so we don't, you know, I would say our main role is like putting a friendly face on these numbers. We work with dozens of providers, all kinds of different people. You know, just on the baseball site, we use RetroSheets data, and RetroSheet volunteers are the ones who, like, they transcribe the information of the game into a machine-readable format. You know, and it's very similar to how you might score a game, but, you know, they have codes for, like, you know, a guy hit a single to right field, and then, you know, the runner on second advanced home, so he got an RBI. So there's a specific code they use for that. We then translate that into a lot of it. You know, we have programs that then translate that into information about that play that we can use to query things. But, you know, so there's that. There's some data we enter on our own. We, you know, a lot of the stuff around things like schools and things like that, you know, we might enter ourselves, all their social media accounts, you know, a lot of corrections around height and weight. SABRE, the Society for American Baseball Research, has a group that does biographical research on players. So they've looked up all of the birthplaces, death places, cemeteries, you know, death dates, birth dates for all of these players and published this and made it available. We licensed that data from SABRE. For current season data, we're using SportRadar, which is one of the large data providers that might provide data to a gambling company or to ESPN or yourselves or people like that. So it's really a combination of a lot of different sources. And some of it is just, you know, individuals who have been interested in sports themselves. We had a really neat experience last year where sacks are only official stats back to, I think, 1982 in the NFL. But there were gentlemen who would either watch, go through game books. The NFL would publish game books after the game that basically is a play-by-play description of the game. They would go through those and, you know, see who got sacks and from 1970s and things like that. Or they would go to NFL films and watch old game films and actually record the sacks from that. And from that, we were able to get like another 10 years of sack data. Which is unofficial, but it's still, you know, complete and shows all the information for the, you know, defensive players. So players like Deacon Jones and you know, Bubba Baker and things like that. And that really had a significant impact. People were, you know, I think, you know, you know, Hall of Fame cases are going to be a lot easier for some of those players when you can say that they had 150 sacks as opposed to, you know, they were just the most fearsome pass rusher and, you know, on their defensive line and things like that. So it's, you know, it's a wide variety of sources that we pull together to present as a whole.
Yeah, the sack, I'm glad you brought that up. The old guy sack records, I absolutely love it. Being able to see what Deacon Jones was doing and everything. And is that something that, you know, you'd like to see happen? Like we're talking about the Negro Leagues numbers being inputted. at least for anything that was a televised sport, right? Like block shots in the NBA, I would think that there's video for, I'm guessing, all the games back to a certain point, or maybe radio calls. Like, how do you go back do that kind of thing? Like, how far back can you go on some of these numbers?
Yeah, some of those the NBA games. NFL is a little easier because there are so many games, so many fewer games,
right?
And so it's there's less to cover there. And sacks were actually recorded as often in like the box score of the game or something like that. For instance, in the NBA, we've I don't know that we'll ever be able to get like block shots. We have a huge Wilt Chamberlain fan on our staff who's of course claims that Chamberlain is the best player in NBA history and probably had like averaged like six blocks a game or something like that in his mind. But there are some sources. Often you're pulling it from a newspaper account of the game. Often, some newspapers had more in-depth box scores than other newspapers. We're often on newspapers.com looking for accounts of the game, things like that. There was the original data set we have for the NBA for our box scores. A gentleman named Dick Fander traveled from – his hobby was traveling from library to library and basically just getting clips of all of the box scores that he could find in those games. And he actually was able to find at least a simple box score for every game in NBA history. And without that, we really wouldn't have, point totals for all of those games that we do. We're slowly trying to expand the number of columns of data we have for that. Some games we only have like field goals made and points and free throws attempted and fouls maybe. Slowly we're trying to expand back with more rebounds and assists and things like that. So it's a slow process, but we're making some progress with it. And we always, there are teams we talk to maybe have like scores reports in a dusty file cabinet somewhere that we can scan and things like that. So it's an ongoing process for us.
Yeah, I don't know if they're still there, but I do remember looking up like college basketball box scores, and you would click on it, and it would be a scanned in. Like you could tell, right. It was the old type font of a manual typewriter box score that was there. That was, I assume, it's like a placeholder. And like when we get, you're going back through them all and inserting them into the Excel format.
Yes.
And eventually they'll all be there. I think it's just fantastic. By the way, we're talking to Sean Foreman, president from Sports Reference, founder of the Sports Reference sites. He'll be at the great talk that's coming up a week from Thursday at the Lindahl Library. I can't wait for that. You can watch it. It's sold out right now, but you can watch it Beyond the Box Score Virtual .splashthat.com. Let me try this again because it's complicated. I'll give it a lot that day if you want to watch it, but it's Beyond the Box Score Virtual .splashthat.com/810is how you can watch that. One last question for you, and that is, you're so involved in all these numbers and all these stats, and we know the teams are, we're watching the Royals, we think try to upgrade and update, or maybe just, maybe not upgrade or update, maybe just listen to more of the analytic part of the game as they are trying to rebuild the organization here. One thing I always think is like everybody looks at when I talk to people, they look at every sport and game like we've arrived, we're finished. This is it. This is everything we've done is to get here, and that there will be no future. And always the ones that, get the edge on everybody else is the one that can see over the horizon and what's going to be next. But do we get to a point like the analytic crunch is really the last 5 years, 10 years? Will we get to a point where the game is solved and there's no advantages to be had?
I'm sure it won't be 100% solved. I think baseball has gotten to a point where it's a little bit solved. I think we know, throw really hard and throw strikes and try to hit home runs is probably the best approach strategy wise. I think when that, you could also make the case that the NBA with the, the tilt, very heavy tilt towards three pointers and shots at the rim, kind of is trending in a similar direction. I think when that happens, it's important for the league to think, are there rule changes we need to make that, do we move the mound back a little bit? Do we, change things about how the fielders play and things like that. So I don't think we'll ever get to a solve point, because I think once you get to that point, I think the pressure then, as we saw, Major League Baseball made fairly significant changes to the game to try and speed it up. I think, if the mix of play is not what we want, I think it's up to the leagues to tweak the rules a little bit to incentivize people to try new things. So I hope we don't get to that point. I know I've been accused of ruining baseball in the past, and my favorite player growing up was Ricky Henderson, so I'd love to see somebody steal 100 bases again. But, there definitely is a case where you can find advantages, and once everybody learns about them, everybody's going to try and do the optimal thing.
Sean Foreman is with us. Time for our Final Four, brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. Four quickies, just tell me a couple of words that go to it. What's your favorite stat?
Kevin Youkilis never swung at a 3-0 pitch.
Really? Wow.
In like 269 times, he never once swung at a 3-0 pitch.
That is just about the Greek god of walks, as those of us who consume the Moneyball book are fond to remember. All right, you have a favorite sport?
I baseball was number one, has always been number one for me. I'm also a big NBA fan here, Sixers and Joel Embiid from Kansas, obviously, and I've gotten into soccer quite a bit as well.
Yeah, and we says here Philadelphia is home base for the company. So I'm a new to soccer guy, but love the soccer right now as well. So I love hearing that. What do you enjoy? What's your food of choice when you watch a game? When you watch a baseball game, let's put it there. What do you like?
When I'm going to a game, there's a really good chicken sandwich at Citizens Bank Park that I usually get when I go to the game.
Okay. All right. I like it. And finally, if you weren't doing this, what the hell would you be doing?
I'd probably still be a math professor, actually. I did that for 6 years, and I'd probably still be doing it if I wasn't doing this. So.
Well, we're the benefactor for it. Sorry to all those kids that could have benefited from your math instruction. We need you doing what you're doing. So we're big fans. Can't wait to see you a week from Thursday. Sean, thanks for giving us some time, and I look forward to talking to you next week.
All right. Thank you both. Looking forward to it as well.
All right. Sean Foreman does a remarkable gig. Remarkable gig when it comes to...
guys, applied mathematical and computational sciences professor at St. Joseph's. When he starts the site, and the site blows up to the point where he actually stops being a professor to run the site. That's how. I can't imagine he expected that to happen when he started that. It got so big, he's like, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
What a story.
You know, I think it sounds similar to a friend of ours, Eric Eager.
Oh, for sure.
Was teaching math.
Yes,
the writing some stuff for PFF on the side. And, that just grew and grew and grew and grew. And now he's like the leading analytics guy for the game of football. So, it's amazing. Every walk of every job you can have, analytics is a part of it and is out there. And the Excel spreadsheet, necessary.
Yeah.
Necessary. For everybody, and that's what this is, the biggest, baddest Excel spreadsheet you've ever seen.
It's ever been.
Sean Foreman, president of Sports Reference, joining us there in the program. Looking forward to hearing what he has to say coming up next Thursday. Of course, our Final Four, brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. It is your way to walk right in. No appointments necessary. If you've suffered an orthopedic injury in everyday life or playing sports, walk right in. They offer that care right there at 435 and all. Weekdays 8 to 7, Saturday. 8-2. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics. Make up your mind, would you?
I need to.
We can wait for that, but that's a little bit down the road. There it was.
Yeah, there. A few more measures.
What do you want to do, Curtis? Make up your mind.
I'm going to give the Good Sense end of the hour answers.
Good choice.
Yes.
By the way, Good Sense had at my house for lunch today. Thank you. Ordered it up, put the ASAP in there. We picked it up in about 20 minutes. My girls came to me as I was working at the house this morning and said, Dad, what are you doing for lunch? I'm like, oh, where would you like Dad to go? Well, we were thinking Good Sense. I'm like, let's do it. Yeah. Let's bang it out here quick.
You knew what that answer was going to be.
Yes. And so Dad is always happy to run and get the Good Sense. So thank you to our friends at Good Sense, GoodSenseSubs.com, to put your order in. Pillowy soft bread, meats and cheeses sliced fresh right in front of you. You can pick your time and pick it up on your way home for a little dinner tonight. It's Good Sense, always a great choice at Good Sense. All right, now, question.
Who was the first player to have back-to-back seasons of 1,300 receiving yards?
He would have first to go, one.
Yeah. He had the fourth and fifth seasons of 1,300 yards, and he was the first one to do it twice.
Well,
and
Don Hutson was like this unicorn of a receiver. Like, nobody had any numbers. He was like Wayne Gretzky of receiving back in the day. But I don't know. I'll try Don Hutson first.
Nope.
Okay.
1962 and 63.
Like, no guys were catching like 300 yards, and he was leading the league with like 1,100.
Right.
Like, he was the only 1,000-yard receiver for a while, and he did it like every year.
Like Babe Ruth when he got into the 50s?
Yeah. 1,300 yards back-to-back as a receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Which nowadays you're like, I don't know, Kelsey every year?
Yeah. The three guys who did it before him, Elroy Hirsch, Bill Grohman, and Charlie Hennigan.
Okay, so.
And then this guy did it back-to-back in 62 and 63. Someone else did it in 63 as well.
I should have looked up the football birthdays, I guess. I bet it's his birthday today, isn't it?
Yes, born on this date, passed away 3 years ago.
One of the most underrated players
I think.
Of all time.
Well, his career numbers aren't overwhelming, but for a spell.
Give me the college attended.
Illinois.
Ditka?
Nope.
Sorry, that wouldn't be a tight end. Illinois? Wideout?
Played
running back.
Flanker. He played some halfback. Wore number 49. His number is retired.
Boy, I am.
Played for the Browns and Commanders.
Bobby Mitchell. Yeah.
Born on this date in 1935. The guy who famously told
the
story.
Wow, good question. Bobby Mitchell, really?
Saw that. I was like, oh, Bobby Mitchell.
You were even talking about Bobby Mitchell earlier, and I'm like, and I knew he was a great, you know, catcher of the football from the running back position before anybody really did that, and it never even dawned on me to guess him.
I tried to come up with, sometimes I try to come up with questions that are with a guest.
Pertinent or entertaining,
and I realized I had
witty,
a baseball
funny.
Question for the hour that Tim was going to be here. I'm like, so right before we were going to Timmy, at the end of the 2 o'clock hour, I saw that it was Bobby Mitchell's date of birth, and I was like, I got to find a Bobby Mitchell question. I couldn't find one in time. So that's what I told you in the break, was that I was trying to find a Bobby Mitchell question. And then I got to the question.
You asked the question.
And you totally forgot
go.
That it was Bobby Mitchell.
Yeah.
The guy I mentioned an hour ago.
Not.
An hour and a half ago.
Swift. Not Swift. By the way, our friend Vicky sent a message along. Message received, Vicky. Such a sweet lady, one of our great listeners.
Yep.
It was great getting a chance to talk to Vicky the other day when we were at Brookside Barrio.
Yeah,
and so you're such a kind lady. Thank you, Vicky, for your kind words that you sent along. It is the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Like we said, we just gave away Good Sense, a chance to win some Joes coming up at the end of this hour. Our thanks to Sean Foreman from the Sports Reference Sites, the man who put them all together.
Still amazes me that he was the guy that did it. As I look at six reference tabs.
Yeah.
It was him.
They're all
just amazing.
All over. I'm responsible for, it has to be millions of the hits, because I have tabs that I open up for like a team, and like nine tabs open up, and like four of them are theirs.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm opening their tabs all the time. Talking a little baseball earlier, we had to let a couple of people go without getting a chance to get on. So you can grab a phone line right now if you want, 913-3810-810. Didn't really get to get through everything I wanted to talk about on the Royals and just baseball in general. We were talking about, you know, contracts, and there's such a preoccupation with getting guys signed like that somehow, because it worked for the Indians in the 90s, the Guardians in the 90s. You know, but the one team that doesn't do it, that's always winning, is the Rays.
Yes.
And I'm worried that the Royals World Series win in 15, until the Rays win a World Series, will be held up as, no, don't do that, because that doesn't, you can't win a World Series that way, even though they've been, what, six games and seven games in the World Series twice, close enough to get there. And so we were pulling the numbers of, you know, where guys are their most productive. Like, what's the most important stat in offense? It's home runs.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were putting together the different lists of where guys, at what age guys had, you know, had the most home runs, right? To show basically, and I did this upside down on this one, so I'll do it again here real quick. You know, the point being, we did it on the home runs. So for strikeouts, like for pitchers,
the exact same sweet spot,
150, little bit younger.
Yeah, 1 year younger, I think.
150 strikeout seasons, right? So starting pitchers that are fairly effective. 26 has 264, 25, 261, 27, 235, 28, 220, 24, 204. Like the 30s trend more after the sweet spot of 26, 27, 28 in baseball. This trends more down to the 20s quickly,
which
speaks to...
The ramp down is a lot steeper.
Well, I think it speaks to the attrition of pitchers, guys that are just
guys
done.
Yeah. Guys who balls over the fence don't usually have career-ending injuries.
Yeah. So
he screwed up his like batter's wrist. That doesn't usually happen.
Yeah, there's 194 to 264 for the top 6 years, and those are ages in order from most to fewest, 264 down to 194, age 26, 25, 27, 28, 24, 29. There is no reason, based upon that, to sign a pitcher who's 30.
No.
To want a pitcher into their 30s. Now, listen, they're not all gone. 30-year-olds are seventh most with 154 seasons of 150 strikeouts. But then 23, then 31, 32, 22. Yeah. 33, 34, 21.
And there's no reason to...
There's so many guys who aren't even in the big leagues at 21, but there are almost as many guys who are 21 who have had 150 strikeout seasons as there are 34.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, if I'm John Sherman, the one thing that I'm walking down to J.J. Piccolo and saying is, we can't have guys who aren't any good till they've been in the big leagues for 3 years. Like, the thing that is so frustrating about where the Royals are right now is we're sitting here waiting for the 1,500 at-bats with all the hitters, right? Bobby Witt is a fine ball player, right? He is a fine ball player. But with the idea, and he is carrying, unfortunately, some Mike Sweeney-ness of like, well, you got to be an absolute Ken Griffey Jr. superstar or this isn't going to work. So we're grading you on that, which is unfair to him. He was drafted second. The Royals have had nothing but great things to say about him. So, unfortunately, he carries those expectations and that kind of pressure. But it does look like if he's going to be a guy who becomes more valuable with his bat, and that comes with getting on base, he, too, is going to need like 1,500 bats before he gets there because he's passing like 800 right now.
Yep. And he seems to be a little ways away.
So, armed with this information that 26 to 28 is the sweet spot for hitting, and you can go a little bit each way from that. So if we wanted to say 24 to 30 for hitters, right? And cap it at 32. No one should be signed in a Royals uniform beyond age 32. For pitching, it's younger.
Yes.
There is no reason. And add today, Jacob DeGrom.
Yep.
Done for the year. Right? And it'd be like, well, that's not shocking. But there was a market for Jacob DeGrom.
Clearly.
Because he got a 5-year, $185 million deal. That's $37 million a year, people. And Jacob DeGrom right now has thrown 30 innings for him. 30 really good innings.
Yeah, right.
2.67 ERA, only 19 hits, only 4 walks. That's 23 base runners in 30 innings. 45 strikeouts. That's a 13.4, so 13.5 strikeout per nine. Strikeout to walk ratio where you want a minimum of 2-1. You know, 3-1 is good. 4-1, very good. 5-1, great. 11.25-1. He's insane.
Something
but he's
always been good at.
His FIP, his fielding independent pitching, 1.57. So that's like what his ERA is when you take out the fielding around him. So he was dominant. But the Texas Rangers are in first place.
Almost 20 games over 500.
20 games over 500 with a run differential. That is, they're talking about being able to chase some of the great run differentials of all time. Plus 153 now at 39-20. And they've gotten 30 innings from Jacob DeGrom. 30 innings. That's it.
They'd have been better off not making that deal, wouldn't they?
Six starts.
Yeah, six starts.
I think two teams that are a great example of what we're talking about here, right up the highway from one another. You've got a team in the Dodgers who have tons of money to spend but are very smart in how they spend it, and a team with the Dodgers who've clearly shown they have plenty of money to spend, are willing to spend it, have not had nearly seen the fruits of that effort, of that spending, as much as the Dodgers have. And I think the manner in which it's spent is probably a big difference.
The Steven Strasburg deal.
Mm-hmm.
I never got around to this part of the conversation early on. Steven Strasburg in 2020, at age 31, signed a 7-year, $245 million contract. Do you know how many innings he has thrown since 2019, since signing that contract? 20, 21. Mm. 20 was a strike-shortened, or was a pandemic-shortened year. 21, 22, 23. How many innings? 4 years. Four, 3 1/3 years with a pandemic-shortened. How many innings would you think that the guy has thrown?
I'll say 100.
100?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a pretty good guess.
Yeah.
Right? Because you know he's been hurt, and you know I'm not asking the question because the inning total is a lot.
Yeah, right.
Right? So that sends you down there. Steven Strasburg has thrown, since that time, a collection of 31 1/3
wow.
innings. 5 innings, 21 2/3, 4 2/3, and today they announced that he has severe nerve irritation at his elbow, and they are now saying they don't know that he'll ever pitch again. $234 million. Throw in the fact that the Nationals also paid Patrick Corbin over $100-plus million, and he yes. sucked, except for when the Royals face him. Actually, did they knock him around? I tried Patrick Corbin for a couple years on the fantasy team. I've got an axe to grind. Mm-hmm. He has not been good. Right? Like, the key is, this is the meeting that I think has to happen with the Kansas City Royals, with J.J. Piccolo and John Sherman. Where are our scouting people and where are our development people? Because we have to be getting production from guys in their 20s. We have to be getting production from guys before arbitration, right? Not only because the team needs it, because we don't want to be paying a bunch of guys on the back end and really should never be paying those guys. Right? There's no reason to. In fact, the economic structure of baseball is one that if you have a giant payroll, you're probably kind of a moron. Like the Padres, I'm going to tell you, at some point, you know, knock on wood, I'll still be doing something like this job. And 3 or 4 or 5 years from now, it is going to be a white hot mess there. They're going to be loaded with $30, $40 million a year guys that are 30 plus years old. And it is not going to look good. They're all going to be hurt. And you're not going to be able to trade them without eating a bunch of that cash. The reason the Royals have to get guys to be productive in their 20s, as much as it is to win baseball games, it's to flip them for more talent. Because unfortunately, the industry does not create enough, you know, what we would call winning players. With what's available and the amount of money you have to spend in Latin America and internationally and the amount of draft picks you have to draft with, you can't do it. And so if you're not going to spend on the free agent market, and frankly, by the time a guy gets through all these years of team control, they're not really worth buying. I mean, are there a couple of guys? Yes, we've talked. There are guys that have hit 25 home runs at age 38. There are guys that have struck out 150 at age 38. There's a few of them kicking around the bigs right now. Verlander, Scherzer, there's some of the old gems. And Randy Johnson and Greg Maddux. And, you know, there are always those guys that are like, wow, Roger Clemens. You know, the whole steroid era is its own thing, because that's one of the things that steroid did was give you the ability to, you know, repair, basically,
yeah.
right? Like
yeah.
to heal,
recover
quickly and be able to keep going out and playing where the normal human body breaks down. You know, the Hank Aarons of the world are coincidences plus athletic anomalies.
Yeah.
And they're there, but building an organization on that is just foolishness.
Yeah.
So, you know, the more you look at it, the more you look at the numbers. Well, the Royals, are they going to sign Vinny Pascantino? Who cares? That's not the formula for success. The formula for success is getting the guys to play when they're young, getting them to be productive when they're young, and then flipping them so you can get more talent. Coming up next hour, we'll get you the things you need to know. Got a couple of interesting ones. Mizzou, hoops, getting one of the Browns back.
Yeah, it's not the one they'd like to have back, the younger brother of Kobe Bryant.
They got longer.
Yes, they definitely got longer.
We'll talk about that. Also, Tom Fornelli coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, college football guru from CBS Sports will be with us. We will talk to him in our next hour as well. A couple things on these contracts just to wrap up the thought on the baseball. Curtis went through and looked at before the contract and after the contract. First of all, the biggest contracts, $300 million or $200-plus million contracts that are out there in baseball. We mentioned the pitchers. Gerrit Cole, $324 million, has been better. That one, to this point, is paying off. It's a nine-year deal he signed in 2020 at the age of 29. So they're only, what, they're in their fourth year of it?
Yeah.
So still five more years to go. We'll see where it is. He's actually gotten better.
A smidge.
A smidge better, but he's at least maintained it. He was 29. Yeah, yeah. Like we said, Strasburg, disaster. Jacob deGrom, so far, disaster. But on the hitting side, the biggest contracts, Mike Trout, Bryce Harper, Giancarlo Stanton, Nolan Arenado, Miguel Cabrera, Anthony Rendon, Joey Votto. How many World Series rings have they won while being on the biggest contracts in baseball history? None. One's played for it. Bryce Harper played for it.
Right.
Was in a World Series. And, by the way, Bryce Harper's the only one whose numbers are better since signing that contract. He signed at 26 years old. So if there is and Mike Trout signed at 27. His numbers have still been very good since. He's actually had a better slug and OPS. But, you know, such a big swing. I mean,
yeah.
And he's starting to have some injuries, which comes with age as well. We'll see if Trout ends up being better. But otherwise, the other guys, Stanton, Arenado, Cabrera, Rendon, Votto, all of them, way better before the contract than after the contract.
In all four categories, all five guys, all four categories, better before than after. When I did that, I was stunned at how consistent, and some of them are major differences.
And I know what
look at Cabrera in particular.
The instant reaction to be like, well, I know the Royals are never going to sign the biggest contract, so how does that apply? I don't know, how the Hosmer and Moustakas,
yes.
How'd they fare when they headed out? And Moose eventually got, what, a three-year deal or something with the Reds. But if you look at Moose, Royals control versus after, where was he better? Eric Hosmer before or after?
Even if Hosmer just got the 100, because there was talk that he was 100 million, but the Padres upped it to 140. Even if it was just 100 million, he wouldn't have performance-wise lived up to that.
Nope. Like, you know, John Sherman has to know, and J.J. Pecola has to assure him, that you're not going to try to unravel physiology, are you? Your plan isn't to, we're going to lock a couple of these guys up to 32 or 3. The mistake we made was letting Moose and Haas go. No, that wasn't the mistake. The mistake that was made was not flipping them. The mistake that was made, and this is where I think the Royals are in dangerous territory again, was that all these guys were due up at the same time. Every one of them came out of team control at exactly the same time. Now, if you want to target a window and go for it, you can do that. But if your goal is to not have these dreck periods of massive rebuilding, then you've got to constantly be letting guys go and filtering in new young guys. You got to have a system that's just jammed. How do you do it? Well, you let go of guys by trading them, getting more young talent so that more guys are injecting back into the big league club. More young, cheap talent is coming back into the big league club. That's what has to happen. That's, we're in an evaluation year. These are the evaluations. They're not just on the field. They're like, what makes it work economically?
All right, with a minimum of 1,000 career innings, who is a career leader in strikeout-to-walk ratio? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.